Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What was that?
That was a kind of groan and a yawn mixed together.
A groan.
Yeah.
Yo.
I like combo words.
We have a stemmage in the house.
Yay!
Oh, been a minute, everybody.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are y'all?
Possibly sick.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I think I have a head cold.
I have successfully not set anything on fire today.
I've heard like head wound and fire. Same. I don't know who's... You did not get fired today? Is that what you said?
I did not. I successfully did not set anything on fire today.
Oh, very nice.
I'm guessing yesterday, previously.
Yesterday, my oven caught on fire. Burned and melted, and yeah,
man,
that's the second time that's happened to me actually in this house.
Jesus. Oh.
I knew what to do this time, so that was good.
Man, that's a fun start to the show. What's up, everybody? It's the SML Podcast.
We're on fire over here. Oh, we're not on fire.
We're not on fire today.
Hockey's here, Bree's here, Jacob's here, and Stemmage is here. Grant Henry, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Feels good to be back. It's been a minute. Haven't been playing a lot of games. Been working and crunching and stuff, but
yeah, all's well. Let's just jump right into it. You've been busy, man. You made a music for a pinball table.
I did. A real deal ball squad update. Upgrade. I should say.
Oh, actually, wait.
In my life.
There we go.
There it is.
We needed that.
Wait, so are we actually recording right now?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't hear you make the like introduction to the show. And so I was, I'm not going to lie, I was really confused. I was like, oh, Joe's playing sounds and like, we're just,
hey, everybody, this is Joe from the SML Podcast, and Jacob has a head cold. How's that?
Yeah, that's good.
It's a good intro.
Jacob has a head wound.
Yep.
Getting donkey punched.
At least I'm getting some.
True. But yeah, Grant, pinball.
Yeah. That was about pinball. It. I did the music and sound for the new Avatar pinball machine, The Battle for Pandora by Jersey Jack. So it is showing up in the wild. Right now it is shipping. There's two versions of the game. Like there's like the regular one and the super fancy one, and the super fancy one I think they're making in a month or so, but they're shipping games out, and it's got my tunes in it. So take your headphones to the local arcade, because it's the only place you'll be able to hear the music. It's very strange to like make sound that is only going to come out of one sound system, right? It's like a blessing and a curse. I can hear exactly what it's going to sound like. I don't have to worry about the car test and the earbuds and the crappy headphones and the monitors and all this stuff. It's going to come out of this machine. So it's kind of a different thing than doing the mixing an album or game stuff. You know what I mean?
How did you get this job? Like how did that come to you?
Well, there's this guy named Mark Seiden, and several years ago, someone sent me a link to this dude that was making a DIY Metroid pinball machine, like a real deal, buying the coils and the motherboards and the switches and the flippers and like building this machine. You can see where this
is like
going.
A digital one, an actual physical Metroid. That's yep. awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And so he I got on his stream and he had put some Metroid Metal music in there. You can see where this is going. in the machine. And I was like, oh my gosh, guy, hey, let me help. Let me like cut you some loops, you know? Let me help in any way I can. So we became fast friends, and then Claire, my wife Claire, actually did some call outs for the game. She did, you know, power bomb, multi ball, like stuff like that. And so he ended up getting picked up by Jersey Jack. They saw what he was doing and hired him. And nice. I was like, well, we'll see you later. It's been fun. Good job going to make a real one now. And he said, well, would you ever be interested in making, you know, doing audio for a real machine, like a proper machine? And I'm like, absolutely, of course. So fast forward a few years, and I got hit up by someone at Jersey Jack, and they were like, hey, we have multiple machines going, and we're in need of an audio person, and Mark had dropped your name. I'm like, oh my God. So I got on the phone with him, and I fully expected to hear. I had my reels ready and my references, and the first question the guy asked was like, how many pinball machines do you own? And I was like, oh. I was like, we're going this way. This is what we're going to do. And I was like, well, I've owned three. I don't own any right now, right? But that is the truth. And we gabbed. And I realized that like they want people on the team that really love the craft. They don't want someone that's just really good at what they do, but they don't really love the pinball thing. So I made the case.
Pinhead doing the music.
They do. They want pinheads on doing everything if possible, right? I mean,
yeah.
People that love the art, because there's an art to it. And so, yeah, I got the job and started cranking on Avatar music and sound.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
From crazy. Talking about pinball to working on pinball. That is awesome. I am so happy for you.
Thanks, buddy. It is a dream come true. Hopefully, hope my intention is to do more. So we'll see what happens. But
I was going
to
say, are you like signed with Jersey Jack, or is this just like a freelance thing?
It was absolute freelance thing. No full position or anything. Just contractor coming in, artist, and then hopefully get to do more. We'll see how things go. But the response has been really positive with the sound package on it so far. People have been streaming it that where it showed up, and I got to go out and do a little interview about it that they put in their little deep dive video when they announced it and everything. And
yeah, I saw that deep dive. You're the first face that popped up in the video.
Yeah, I said a bunch of things about Avatar, and they stuck me in the front. And I was like, all right, I'll take it. I did hair and makeup for the first time. That was new. Anyway, but it's been really cool. And it was really wild kind of working. It's high pressure working with like a James Horner soundtrack. It's freaking Avatar. It's James Cameron, you know. And we did use the main motif from James Horner's, like, Becoming One of the People is like the main Avatar theme, and we utilized that, had access to that, and then I just sort of went crazy with it, and writing new music that fit the modes. And then I had ideas for multi-ball to kind of like zazz things up a bit, like I had the idea to write a piece that would sound like it belonged to the movie, and then just sort of slide in some distortion and some electronic stuff, and put like a trap kit in there, like drums instead of just the thunder drums and the timpanis that you hear in all orchestral music, and made the case to Disney for it, because everything had to be approved.
Yeah.
Because they're really protective of Avatar, and they bought in. So there's some heavier stuff in this game, not metal per se, but it's that symphonic kind of European stuff that you sometimes hear. It's a little more like that. So I wanted to get some intensity for the multi-ball stuff, and they were okay with it. So I was able to put a little bit of what I'm used to doing traditionally in there. So that felt good.
Are there any talks to release the music on like Bandcamp or anything?
Yeah, Jersey Jack has not done that in the past. Stern has started doing that. So the last couple games, or not all of them, but several of them have had vinyls put out for their games, but not ones that have licenses attached to them necessarily. But that is a TBA. I know I'll be able to put up probably some samples for my reels and things like that. But no idea about like, I mean, that would just make sense. You know, I you have to kind of turn that music into an album, like it is with game stuff too. If it's just a bunch of loops, you got to kind of like albumify it, you know, make them songs. But I would love to do that. And well, hey, well, maybe we'll see what happens if the response is good enough. Wonder if they
get that multi-ball theme on the show.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, we'll see what we can do. See what we can do there.
Ask Disney if we can get the okay to do.
Yeah, right.
Be like, who?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. But yeah, no, it was really fun and a very different game like, but a new thing, you know.
So cool.
That is very cool.
I really hope one of my local areas gets the table. I know on your post I tag like two of the closest barcades in our area, which is still like an hour and a half or 2 hours either way. And the one said that they're looking into it. So
yeah, I think it's the Jersey Jacks are a little more expensive. Like there's base models for Stern that are way cheaper, but the base model for Jersey Jacks are expensive. They're just really nice machines. They're like 100 pounds more. The number of lights in this game, there's a UV mode in this game. So when you hit the eclipse, the whole machine starts glowing, all this extra paint and twinkles and everything. Like it's nuts. And so it's very premium, and which means it's a bigger buy-in, you know? So yeah. Some of these arcades like their machines and like keeping them. And this one seems to be getting a good response so far. So maybe one will show up near your sister or something.
Yeah.
So
or maybe one will show up at MAGFest.
Yeah, maybe one will be a mag. That'd be cool.
That would be awesome. You could sign it.
That would be cool. Yeah, I'll just right on the glass, right where your flippers are. Draw a Metroid right in the middle. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Not sure if it'll be there or not. That is not my purview. But I'll definitely bring a blue Sharpie to write all over it if it shows up.
Just doodle on the glass.
That's right.
Put a dick on blue, it somewhere.
Blue Metroids all over this. Metroids with blue Metroids and blue dicks.
Yes.
All over this machine.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
So anyone have any questions for Grant? Don't all talk at once.
I answered all the questions.
I mean, this is pinball. How much attention do you legitimately get paid personally?
Yes, it is pinball. Great question. Next. Yeah.
Oh man, so should we dive into news? There's a good amount of news this week that we could talk about.
Let's do it.
Let's rock it.
All right. Game Pass additions and departures. A whole lot more departures than arrivals. September 19th, Wargroove 2 hit Game Pass. And if you're a console player, that's all you got.
PC. I don't even know what it is, so okay.
PC is getting Frostpunk 2 on the 20th and Ara History Untold on the 24th, but nothing else coming to console Game Pass unless something happens at Tokyo Game Show.
There's like they show video games?
Well, there's people speculating that the Pixel remasters might finally come to Xbox and hit Game Pass. It's just rumors and speculation, but I'd love to see it happen.
I mean, they don't need to hit Game Pass. They just need to hit the console.
Yeah, just release.
I just want to play 6. Like, that's... Yeah. I need it.
Yeah, they need to do something. But a lot of games leaving Game Pass. PC is losing The Walking Dead and The Walking Dead Season 2. Game Preview is losing Valheim, and then we are also losing Gotham Knights, Let's Build a Zoo, Loop Hero, My Time at Porsche, Paw Patrol Grand Prix, and Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Trilogy.
I didn't even know Phoenix Wright was on there until I saw the announcement for it leaving, and now I'm super sad.
That stinks.
I just got into the series, and I'm like, I want to play it. Yeah.
Well, you got 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Yeah, a lot of games leaving, though. I hope something happens at Tokyo Game Show, because this is a really disappointing month.
When is Tokyo Game Show?
I think next week.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's next week sometime.
Drop it, bitch!
Injury, thank you for dropping 100 biddies. Appreciate the support. Appreciate you being here. Yeah, Game Pass. That's any thoughts on Game Pass? Is anyone worried about Game Pass?
Or
do you think it's just a slow month?
I mean,
it's just a slow month.
Yeah, are they removing more than they're adding? Generally,
yes.
Okay. That's
yeah, but time. I mean, there's yeah. been times where Sony's done the same.
Yeah.
And I'm always same. Worried about Sony's, too.
Because they have a lot leaving in October. PlayStation Plus losing a big chunk of games, including a bunch of Dragon Quest games. In October, they're losing Dragon Quest Builders 1 and 2, Dragon Quest Heroes 1 and 2, Dragon Quest 11S, Gotham Knights as well. Little Big Planet 3, it's a fucking first party game, what the hell? Yeah. R-Type Dimensions, The Evil Within, Tsukiden, Kiwami, and Ultra Street Fighter 4.
Jesus.
That is a lot. But we don't know what they're adding next month.
Yeah. But the State of Play, I believe, is supposed to be next week, so we might hear more about that.
I don't know if they talk about much of PS Plus during their State of Plays.
No, but we might get more info just in general.
Some day one launches, maybe.
Yeah.
But, yeah. A lot of games leaving services.
I mean, that's stuff that's planned way ahead of time, you know what I mean? I mean, that's like... They have an agreement to keep it on for six months or a year or 2 years. And then this is just when it's happening. Right. I mean, I don't know. It seems like the Xbox, the games come in waves. They'll come like all of a sudden there'll be a clump. It's like five new ones all of a sudden. And then it'll be dry for a while. And I mean, there's no way they're going to be able to like actually keep that even.
Xbox does announcements the first and third Tuesdays of the month. And they cover half the month.
Mm.
So in 2 weeks, we'll find out more Game Pass stuff. October.
I have a list of Game Pass games I have not even touched that I really want to get to.
Same.
Which ones? Let's see. I know Dungeons of Hinderberg was one of them. That's like, I'll go and install them just to
play it. It's so good.
Yeah. Okay. Great. I figured I check like Metascores when it first came out, but I just kind of put it away. But that's cool to hear you say that. And gosh, there were a couple other ones. I'll have to look it up. How do I look at the most recent Game Pass releases here? Anyway, there were several. I did play a little bit of the Doom 1 and 2 when it dropped, just to kind of see what it was like. Chia.
Oh, that's a good one.
I was waiting for that. I play guitar on that game. I was waiting because I wanted to play it on my couch.
Yeah.
And so I just sort of ignored it, right, and waited. And now it's here, and I haven't been able to touch it. But
yeah, I remember when that first came out on PlayStation. I was like, hey, Grant's in the game.
Yes.
You're everywhere these days, man.
Get trying to be SML, pinball.
Indeed. Let's talk Embracer, because there's some pinball news here, too. Embracer announced that the proposed sale of 4A Games, who do Metro, and Zen Studios, who do Pinball FX, have been canceled. They were the options on the Saber Interactive sale, but the option to include those two were canceled, so they will stay with Embracer.
Hmm.
Does that worry you at all that they're still with Embracer?
Yeah. I don't know how well Embracer is doing. I imagine it's still not doing well, so anyone being at Embracer worries me currently still.
That's fair.
I don't know how long they're still going to exist.
Yeah, there's no reason to have faith in them right now, right? So
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, have they released? What has come out under their umbrella, period? Probably some stuff, and I just don't know. But anything? Like, since they just slurped up all these companies... I mean, there's people that just do DLC all the time. Like, Zen's always doing new tables and whatever. But...
trying to look up, like, an investor report or something on what they've had. Because they have so many groups under them, including THQ Nordic, who is putting stuff out.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, Timber says a few games. So,
THQ side has been putting stuff out, at least.
That's good.
I can start naming their studios, but they only have like fucking 40 or 50 of them.
Crazy.
They have 108 studios.
Lord.
Wow.
As of June this year. So they've probably lost a few of those since then.
Yeah. I know they have a handful of like umbrella companies like THQ Nordic, PlayOn, Coffee Stain.
Yeah.
I guess Zen and Metro are two of those now. I don't know.
Zen is listed as just another studio. But yeah, under ones like THQ Nordic, there's like 20-ish that are under it.
Well, let's talk more Zen news. They announced that they're going to have a new Pinball Bytes video later this month, revealing a new Williams table and a new Pinball M table. Grant, what are your thoughts?
M, what would it be if it's M? What's like a relevant horror something that they haven't touched yet? I don't know.
I'm hoping that we get like a Bethesda pack for Pinball M. Like, give us.
Oh, Doom. Yeah, that would make sense.
Bring back the Bethesda tables and gore them up a bit.
I would love an Evil Dead table. I think that would be really fun. Like a funny one, you know?
That'd Ash style. Neat.
Not like the new stuff, which the new stuff's good, but. And then for Williams, I don't know. One Williams table. I think it's going to be, they talked about the year that it was coming out on their previous video. And I remember looking at the list of games that came out that year, because I'm a freaking pin nerd. I think it's going to be, Whirlwind. That's what I think it's going to be. I wish it was Police Force, which is amazing and was originally going to be a Batman game, but it got changed at the last minute. That's happened a lot. But I think it's going to be Whirlwind. So do I win anything if it's Whirlwind?
I'll buy the table for you.
Oh, okay. Wait, I'll take it.
I was going to send him foot picks, but I mean, hell, that's more expensive.
Win-win.
Can I tell you a Whirlwind story real quick? Just because it's absolutely inappropriate in the middle of news. That table, when you play it, there's the topper on that machine has a fan in it. And when you get to like, you know, when the whirlwind comes, when the tornado comes, it blows at you, right? Like it blows your hair and it's like, oh, multi-ball whirlwind. Well, someone at one of the pinball events hijacked the machine before bringing it and had put like a high power Black & Decker blower on the back of the machine that you couldn't see and routed the pipe up through the fan hole. So like when you hit multi-ball, it's just blasting people in the face. It's one of the funniest things. I mean, women there with their hair just blowing back. It's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. So that's what we call immersion right there.
Good God.
Yeah. Not going to be in the Zen title, unfortunately, but
unfortunately, that would be amazing if they found a way to do that.
Yep.
The fan attachment for the controller.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
It's like the Rez Trance vibrator. Remember that thing for the PS2?
Oh, geez. Yes. That little weird brick. Yeah. That you played. Yeah. With Rez. That's right. I forgot about that. Weird.
Let's plug a fan into the USB port on the Xbox and just blasted with wind. During pinball. That'd be the greatest waste of resources I could imagine.
Better than Smell-O-Vision.
Amen. More THQ news. THQ Nordic announced that Darksiders 2 Definitive Edition is getting a Series X and S and PS5 upgrade on October 15th. It'll run $29.99, or it's a free upgrade for current owners.
I don't know if I have that. That's great. That's a great game. I really, it got some flack. But I really like that one. I like it's looty, but in the right way. I like that one.
I've had fun with all the Darksiders games. I think it's a great series.
Awesome. They're great.
Nintendo announced the end of regular support for Splatoon 3 after, quote, two incredible years.
Wow. That's it?
Yeah.
You mean like no more updates, I guess, right?
Yeah, the online play is still going to be there, obviously. It's just they won't have any more updates or like live events or stuff like that.
Huh.
Fair.
Interesting.
Yeah. The upcoming Skate Revival will be launching in early access in 2025.
That's cool.
Yep. And then Horizon Zero Dawn Remastered has been rated by the ESRB because, of course, it's getting a remaster.
I don't
Sony
understand
is
why.
Just milking their shit at this point. Like, how many remasters do they need of last gen games that
all
already have 4K patches?
All of them.
Like, how unnecessary is this one?
Well, very. But, you know, as long as idiots keep buying the same game 5 times, they're going to keep selling it.
That's why we have so much Skyrim.
Exactly. True. That's
Skyrim
exactly
hasn't even
about.
Gotten remasters. It's just been re-releases.
Yeah, on different platforms or.
Are you sure it didn't
Bonus
get
Creator
a remaster?
Club.
It didn't get a remaster. It got an anniversary edition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the news I have. Aki, what do you got?
I got sadnesses. The Xbox Ambassador Program, for any of you who are in it, it is going away. This is their last time. And October, I think it was 15th or 19th, one or the other, it goes bye-bye permanently. It is...
Ouch.
Yeah, yeah. They apparently, they've decided they're just going to bring that to the community stuff for everyone to do it, and because they think everyone should just be doing what the ambassadors are doing.
Oh, that's a horrible idea.
Yeah, I assume they're not bringing any of the rewards with any of it either, so that kind of sucks. And they're bringing it to... also to something called Xbox Research. I don't even know what that is.
I get those in my email every now and again. We're not allowed to talk about them, but yeah, I get those in my email every now and again, so I kind of know what they're talking about. They're surveys that help them do market research on stuff, but they're geared towards community members from the ambassadors. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, and rewards and stuff are all going away. So if you have any tickets, if you're part of that program, you have until...
11 days.
Yeah, I think they're going to be doing weekly ones until basically it's over, I believe.
Yeah,
or maybe just till the end of this month.
Next week basically is the last week, and they're going to be doing like... 15 giveaways that you can put your sweepstakes tickets into.
Yeah, I just put everything into Visions of Mana because I don't have very many tickets. I've been part of this. This would have been my second one. And of course, they close it. And they probably closed it, and it's my fault. I am so sorry, everyone. Every time I join something, it closes immediately.
Well, this podcast hasn't.
That's because you're bad luck and you're forcing it to stay, probably.
That's true. I'm willing the podcast to just stick around so I keep getting free games.
Exactly.
My will, my cheap ass will is so strong.
Exactly.
Whatever works.
So yeah, you will still have access to the accessibility stuff. Because they have a badge for that, and they're trying to make sure everyone can get that badge before it's over. You have until the very last day to do that. It isn't giving out any more experience. And yeah, it's really sad, because I really liked every 3 months getting a code for Xbox Game Pass Ultimate for free. That was nice.
Yeah.
You know?
Damn.
Cut down a little bit of the obsessive cost of the shit, and now that's going away, and that makes me very sad. I really appreciated that.
No.
If you are part of it and you have taken part in any of the stuff this month or for this season, you already have the code in your rewards for this month. Even if you weren't anywhere close to finishing it. So go get that and use it. That's
there you
it.
Go. All right.
Yeah,
Bree, what news do you have?
Let's see. Nintendo and Pokemon are in fact suing Pocket Pair for infringement of patent rights for over Pal World.
I know. I like how a lot of people are claiming this is over like the character designs, and it's not.
It isn't.
No,
it's about
not.
Like the mechanics of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really?
Yes, and the problem is Nintendo has a lot of patents on a ton of basic ass game mechanics that are used by most games. So this isn't so much, oh, they copyrighted this, as, oh, this is like Pokemon in a way we can't sue for copyright infringement. We don't want this to exist, so fuck this group specifically. Because their game patents are for very basic stuff that a lot of games use, and they don't go after them. They specifically don't like this.
They haven't even said what the patents are.
Not
sure revealed yet.
I'm. It's probably in the document. I don't know if the document is fully live.
Pocket Pair has already said that they don't know what they're being sued for.
Oh.
Like, they just know that a lawsuit's been filed.
Yeah.
From what I understand, Japanese IP laws are a tad bit different from American, but I don't know. Like, apparently, you could just file this stuff and just be like, "Yeah, it's ours." And oh, okay, cool.
I have a feeling that it might be over the capturing mechanic, would be my guess.
I mean, yeah, like some of the people at work today were wondering about that as well. And I was thinking about like all the other different knockoffs. I mean, like Monster Rancher, you had to pop in a CD or DVD. I don't know how Digimon worked.
No, I mean specifically over like you use a ball to catch your Palmon. I think that's probably one of the big things. But again, they don't have to hit every company. All we can do is
speculate right now. So, yeah, we know more. And if Pocket Pair doesn't know what's going on, who are we to say what's going on?
Yeah.
The sad thing is because of the way this works, they don't have to sue everybody who uses the mechanics. They can just sue whoever they want that uses their mechanics. So it could be any mechanic, realistically speaking, that they have a patent for, to which I don't even know the absurd amount of them they have. So, like, there could be 10 other games just like this, but they just don't care. This one's popular, and they apparently don't like it, so they've decided to bring down the hammer.
Speaking of bringing down the hammer, spam bots in chat.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Carnage beat me to it so fast that I unbanned them accidentally.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I had to reban them.
I do appreciate that, like, these cheap viewer shit, it pops up as likely harasser restricted, and no one else gets to see it.
Thank God. So
it's just the mods that see it and get to ban them before it pops up. Oh, okay,
because I was, like, scrolling through, and I'm like...
No one else could see it. It's just the mods can see the harasser.
You would think that since it already has that listed, after that person was was banned enough times, the website would be like, okay, we're just deleting this, just to make it nice and easy.
I'm pretty sure I'm, like, on some whitelist where if they get a ban report from me, it just, like, the account instantly gets banned, because I get emails almost immediately that say, we're looking into this, and then 2 seconds later is the email that says, they've been banned, congratulations.
Nice.
But yeah, good, so shit. My other piece of news is kind of along similar lines. Last week or the week before, somebody brought up that there's supposed to be a new Flappy Bird game coming out, and it turns out that this supposed remake has nothing to do with the original creator. He has not sold any of the rights for it, and it supposedly is full of crypto transactions, and he stated on his Twitter that he is totally against crypto. So, not sure what's going on with that, but hopefully there's a good resolution.
Apparently,
to that.
He let the trademark lapse. And
he let it lapse, and it's traded hands like 5 times at this point.
Wow.
Yeah. And while the crypto accusation has not been officially confirmed or denied, the guy who is heading the company that is going to be making it, he's all in a bunch of Web3 projects, and so that's where the crypto assumption is. However, the devs also haven't said no, we're not doing that. So
yeah,
it's likely.
Yep.
Or it might just be NFTs.
Yeah. NFTs. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what all the kids want.
Indeed.
Don't even understand NFTs, like, not in the I don't understand how they work. I just don't understand why
they exist.
People think that that's a good idea, because it
because
just
people are stupid,
like, I guess.
Sometimes the most simple answer is the correct one. People are fucking dumb. The end.
That is true. This show is proof of that.
Yeah,
we're all still on news.
Can we make this episode an NFT? Can we make this next news story an NFT?
Sure, oh Grant, what news do you have that's an NFT?
Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah.
All right, well, someone claim it. Send me some money. Here we go. a game I'm looking forward to, no one's talking about, is coming out tomorrow, called Parking Garage Rally Circuit. And it's basically a Saturn-era rally driving game that takes place in a parking garage. and I play the demo and it's very cute. And that's all.
I wish I knew you were interested in that because Purnell's reviewing it on Tuesday.
Ooh, sweet. Cool. Looking forward to hearing it.
I got you on the job if I knew.
How does this work? Does someone send me money for that story?
Yeah, I'll send you like $2.
Sweet. Okay, I'll take it. I'll do more of those.
Get you another pinball table.
Sure. Here you go.
What other news you got, Grant? Anything you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think that's about it.
Jacob, what you got?
All right. So I actually have a bunch of news. Concord's director has reportedly stepped down as the studio is still waiting for Sony to decide what's going to happen with it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I still don't know why they bought the studio before they knew what the game was.
Because that was the cool thing to do at the time.
Yeah. It's just such a shame for that studio that they worked so hard for so long for so little. And now we don't know what's going to happen with the studio.
Yeah. Three sources told Kotaku that employees are pessimistic that Concord will return. Some of them have already been asked to explore pitches that the studio might work on next. And some also believe mass layoffs are also coming.
That wouldn't shock me.
Oh, yeah, I totally believe that.
Do you guys think that if it had come out for free and was just without, like, with microtransactions then and not for purchase, that it would have had some life?
Maybe if it was for free?
Hold on.
So for free without purchases?
No, with microtransactions, like Fortnite.
Oh.
A little bit.
I mean, I like, it was a buyable game, right? You pay money for it, and then they tack on stuff, right? There would have been eventually. Maybe there weren't now, but like to get people in the door, I just think it feels like the kind of game that would be like that. You know, they could have gone that direction, or maybe that's something they could do. They could bring it back and make it free to play as a second try. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? It's probably
that's the theory that everyone has for it, that it's going to get reworked as a free to play. I guess we'll see.
No.
But bouncing off of that news, Bungie's Marathon reboot will supposedly still cost $40 despite Concord flopping. Because apparently at this point, to make the ship date, it is too damn late for them to change it to a free to play. Like, they've thrown too much money into it. It's too far along. I think they said it's coming April.
Wow.
Let me check. It's coming out next year, but
that's not sounding good either.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was looking forward to it. And then I saw the trailer and I mean, the trailer looks cool, but I couldn't give a Texas shit about it. Like extraction shooters.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the first one was essentially Doom, except you could aim up and down. So, you know, whatever. Okay. Kingdom Hearts 4 is going to lead to a series conclusion. So
allegedly.
Well, that's what he said.
Yeah. I don't know if I believe
only a few years left until I retire. So I must decide whether to retire first or finish the series first. He's developing Kingdom Hearts 4 with the intention of it being a story that will be completed.
I thought the story was already completed.
No, it's Disney. There's money to be made. True. Speaking of Disney and theoretical money to be made, Disney Mirrorverse. We hardly knew ya. If you recall, it was a mobile gacha game that they had released about 2 years ago, and to get hype for it, they actually had Todd McFarlane's action figure company make all of these action figures, and I think he actually designed like how the characters would look and stuff like that. And so you had Sully from Monsters Inc. dressed up in this like kind of like sci-fi knight armor. You had one, Belle was like a mage, kind of character. And apparently Kermit the Frog was a banjo swinging swamp king. But the designs look cool, but those action figures quickly went on clearance and over into Ollie's Bargain Outlet. And to be honest, I didn't even know that the game had actually released. I thought it was just like, I thought it had been kept getting pushed back. But apparently it's been around for 2 years and the game servers will shut down on December 16th, 2024. The story will get finished, but yeah. So
you talking about it is more than I ever knew about it.
Yeah, I'm not like, I mean, and the thing is that the only reason why I even knew about it is because I go into the toy aisle, like at Target and Walmart with my kids. Like, and so I saw the action figures and like, they look cool, but like my wife's going to kill me if I bring home more shit. So
what other news you got?
Okay. The devs of Bugsnax are having an issue thanks to AI.
This Google, story's funny as hell.
Google keeps Google's AI keeps insisting that a Bugsnax sequel is coming out next month. The devs aren't actually making it.
Oh my gosh.
There is no Bugsnax sequel.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Bugsnax in the city. Fucking AI is, oh my god.
Garbage. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Googling Bugsnax 2 release date. Gives you the information. Bugsnax 2 The City is an American puzzle game developed by Young Horses and being released on October 15th, 2024.
But it's not.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't exist.
Apparently, it's all come because of Idea Wiki, where people could just write whatever damn rumors that they want, and it's whatever. Funnily enough, I actually knew about this place beforehand because I forget what I had to look up related to Outright Games, and I found like all of these like fake Outright Games that's like this one dude had made. It was like Bubble Guppies and stuff like that, or, like a bunch of like Nick Jr. games. Mm. And I had asked Stevie, who's like head of who does all the communication with us, the brand ambassadors. He's like, yeah, that's just an overenthusiastic fan, and he had like a smile emoji that I was just like, that was a very diplomatic answer. Anywho,
yeah.
This actually just got announced 15 minutes before the show. Netflix is releasing a Devil May Cry anime show coming out April 2025. If you watch the teaser, it's pretty damn awesome.
I could watch that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It looks really awesome. And then Movie Watch.
We need a theme song for that.
You do.
You say that every time and you still haven't made one.
How am I going to make one?
Yeah, he's not musically inclined.
It's Movie Watch. There.
There we
actually,
go.
Actually, yeah, that was it right there.
Please cut that.
Please. Yeah, that's now the Movie Watch theme.
Send it to me and let me augment it. Please. We're done. Anyway.
it's just Grant on a kazoo in the background.
I'm just this hype man, like...
Yeah, boy. Yeah. What?
Limp Bizkit. Right, what were you saying? It's Movie Watch. There.
So EA has officially announced that The Sims is going to be getting a film adaptation. It's going to be done through Lucky Chap, which also did Barbie. And the director of Loki, Kate Herron, is going to be making it. There's nothing else really. Something about Freezer Bunnies. I never played it, so I don't know. But the Watch Dogs movie has finally finished filming.
Why?
Ooh,
sorry.
Interesting.
I don't know.
No, that's the proper reaction.
The best thing is that like nobody even knew it was getting filmed. Wow. So yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's pretty much that. And the last thing, of course, it wouldn't be the same if I didn't have some Sonic movie watch. So, if you go see Transformers 1 tomorrow morning at the first showing at your local movie theater, this is going to be 9:20, because both films are being released by Paramount and reviews of Transformers 1 has not been kind so far. To get butts in the seats and get everybody excited about Sonic the Hedgehog 3, if you go see it, the first 300 people at various theaters will get an exclusive Shadow the Hedgehog poster, which is looking pretty damn awesome. And then on top of it, Keanu Reeves signed a bunch of them.
Whoa.
Nice. And they will be randomly inserted throughout.
Oh, I forgot he was in it. That's right. Yep. 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 Forgot. Wow.
So if you're not doing anything tomorrow, you know, go see that early morning showing.
Oh, excuse me, what you're doing?
Whoa. Nah, I gotta work. Also, I'm just, what am I gonna do?
That Transformers 1 movie is 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's better than I thought it would be. That's not bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 86.
Early reviews were not good.
Interesting. Yeah, I feel like the movies like this are always kind of a mixed bag, you know?
Let me see how many 90 reviews. Okay. Well, then fuck the haters, apparently.
We'll see. I think it looks really kind of neat. I mean, origin story. And it doesn't look too clever. Is that the word? Like, I don't know. It looks fun. It looks like a cartoon. Not like a, you know, it doesn't look like just Avengers comedy. It looks like an actual cartoon. I don't know. Looks neat.
They've actually already said what the next Transformers movies will be. They are looking at making Transformer like a sequel to Transformers 1. Maybe it'll be called Transformers 1 2. I don't know. And the other thing is that they're still going ahead with the live action movies, even though Rise of the Beasts didn't do that hot. The next movie will be a crossover with G.I. Joe.
Whoa. What?
That'll be weird.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm looking forward to it.
That's wild.
Will The Rock be in it?
I don't John think Cena. So. I don't think so, because that series is kind of done. Like the Snake Eyes movie had nothing to do with it.
Hmm.
Injury just put GI and then my face in chat. GI Joe.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, that's all I
got. The little things that make you giggle. Should we dive into reviews if that's all the news we got?
Sure.
Yeah. Bree, I know you have some sailing to do tonight, so we got to rush through yours. It's what did you tell me it was today?
Yar, mateys, it be talk like a pirate day.
Oh yeah, yar. I forgot.
Yar. So you're gonna yar it up tonight, aren't you?
Probably not. Let's be honest, I'm lazy.
You're not gonna talk like that the whole stream?
Sounds like too much effort. I might throw in some yars and mateys a few times here or there, but no, I'm lazy.
That makes sense. So reviews, matey.
All right.
Yar.
Yar.
Yar. First game to talk about tonight is Funko Fusion, developed and published by 1010 Games, released September 13th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $59.99. Experience a festival of fandom like never before in Funko Fusion. Play through iconic worlds and mash up characters inspired by some of your favorite franchises in an action-adventure game with uniquely authentic, irreverent humor from the creative minds of 1010 Games. Bree, tell us about Funko Fusion.
The Wonder Worlds are being corrupted by some purple goo, and an evil entity named Eddie has stolen Freddy Funko's crown and corrupted it, so he can now corrupt the other worlds. The crown is shattered, and if we can find the crown pieces before the enemy, we can stop him, which also means you'll need to find all the crowns to get to the final boss. This is...
Can I interrupt real quick?
Yes.
So is that just the plot, or is there like an overarching like strategy to this where theoretically there's a bad ending?
I doubt there's a bad ending.
Okay. Well, I mean, because I mean, you were like, it's a race against time before they. Okay.
Yeah, continue. I'm just setting up the plot. Yeah.
I'm giving this game more credit than apparently I should. Oh.
All right. So this is a pop culture and nostalgia fun fest featuring. Here's the list: Jurassic World, Battlestar Galactica, Hot Fuzz, The Thing, Scott Pilgrim, Masters of the Universe, The Umbrella Academy, Back to the Future, Jaws, The Mummy, Nope, Knight Rider, Shaun of the Dead, Chucky, Megan, Xena, Voltron, Five Nights at Freddy's, and Invincible.
Jeez. Huge list. That is a lot.
Some of these have worlds to explore, and some are special cameo quests you unlock under special conditions. So the game prompts you to choose a world at the beginning because everyone has a fandom and they're hoping that you're going to want to jump into one of the seven that they've created for you to start with. So I started out playing Starbuck from OG Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, buddy.
In addition to licensed fandoms, you'll also find product placement from sponsors like KFC and Loungefly.
Yeah, I saw you shoot a KFC bucket. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that's, yep, yep. So yeah, each of the Wonderworld stories... Yep, has five stages and gives you four characters you can switch between. Sometimes there are reasons to use one character over another for certain, like, abilities or weapons. Other times it's just preference. In Jurassic World, I really didn't like Owen's shotgun as much, so I used somebody else who had automatic weaponry instead. The level names are punny or jokey references. There's a decent variety of mission types. In Battlestar Galactica World, I was on some sort of escort mission, and then... The next level, it was a defend mission where, unfortunately, the waves didn't seem to have a rhyme or reason to them, and I think the AI was getting enemies stuck someplace, and so it was making it so that the waves wouldn't start the next wave. Oh, there are fetch and find quests, like finding and rescuing all the huskies in The Thing. The comedy was not as big as I expected, but it was there in the little things. Like, I opened a porta potty and found a dino pooping, but before it got mad and attacked me. But it farted as it died. It was really cute. Huh. Oh. During an intro scene, the Cylons are watching Earth TV and ogled at Kit with its red flashing light being so similar to the Cylon hens.
Wow, that's sharp. Cute. I like that. That's actually really good.
Yeah. So one thing to note is you aren't locked into the story you start with. You can go back to the main hub and change worlds once you've gotten at least one crown. But that number gets higher as you go on. So you'll need to finish some levels before you bounce around too much. So, like, when I got stuck on a level in Battlestar Galactica World, I was able to go back to the Funko Factory area and choose another fandom to immerse myself in, like Masters of the Universe. You'll still need do each of the five levels in the story in order within the worlds, but then you can return to them later in any order you want to find collectibles that you've missed and unlock character levels like the cameo ones. Like Lego games, there's a lot of replayability here, as you'll find the areas are inaccessible except with the ability of certain characters that you unlock elsewhere, like Umbrella Academy's number 5 can teleport in and out where there's special arrows marked on the floor, or Allison can talk to people and convince them of stuff, and that is something I found in, say, Jurassic World, that there were some locked areas I couldn't get to, but now that I've played Umbrella Academy, that I can use number 5 when I go back to replay the level. A lot of the levels are very puzzle-based, but there is a lot of combat, too. Combat is a mixture of third-person shooting and melee. Sometimes you'll need to get the job done on... You'll need both to get the job done on certain enemy types. Some enemies have shields, for example, and to get through that, you'll need a gun. But once you get the shield down, they only take melee damage. Or you need to stagger an enemy with your pistol and then punch in for the kill. Some of the waves are short, others felt way too long and overwhelming. It was super satisfying to pop the heads off of enemies, though, when you get a headshot, which, of course, easy target because their heads are so large to begin with. But there's also a really nice aim assist accessibility feature that is automatically on when you start the game unless you tell it otherwise. Death is and isn't forgiving. If you lose all of your health, you become a ghost. And you have 1 minute to smash enough things to gather vinyl, or get to the pop box to purchase a resurrection. If you don't get there in time, don't have enough vinyl, or have died 3 times, you have to restart the whole level. Which happened to me a couple of times.
Ouch.
Part of that was because I didn't get any tutorial explaining to me how resurrection worked, and I eventually figured it out. You collect currency called vinyl. You can use it to revive yourself, as I just mentioned. You can buy from special chests, make things in machines like special tools and weapons and health items. You can beat up or break just about everything to get some vinyl. Like, there are chests all around as well that have different items and vinyl in it for you. You start every level fresh with no vinyl and full health. You get a gold crown when you complete the level. There are additional silver crowns you can find or purchase within each level that you can use for unlocking additional characters at the factory hub. And then any vinyl unused at the end of a level gets banked for later. Graphically, the game is beautiful. They've created fun cartoon mixed with realism worlds to match the vinyl pop characters and their stories. You have the choice to switch between performance and fidelity in the options menu. There are weather effects where appropriate. The landscapes feel full and detailed. Jurassic World was gorgeous. The water was fabulous. There's reflections in glass. The textures of stone and things were stunning. And of course, the pop vinyls themselves were amazing. The Funko Pops don't really change expressions, though, outside of some eyebrow movement, nor do they have voices. Just like in the old LEGO games, they kind of mumble. And this sometimes ruined the vibe of a cool cutscene, unfortunately. Other times, there were speech bubbles. Like, the dinos screeching was super comical. They're just, like, running at you in a little speech bubble. Screech! The audio and music is well done. Sometimes the familiar music and ambient sounds are totally what makes the scene. I also totally got, like, muted audio in my VOD last night because apparently a lot of that, yeah. Yeah, I was warned about one of them, and not apparently more things have copyright on them, so.
Yay.
There's some very good music in there.
Now, does there give you an option to, like, switch over to, like, non-copyrighted music?
Yeah, no, there is no streamer mode. They just warned you with the game, like, if you're streaming it, just, like, you might have to turn the audio down on certain things. But there is a lot of detail to the game, too, like little things you find coming out of a trash can. There are different collectibles, like Cylon toasters. They're actually toasters that have, like, the little, you know, and you have to shoot them. But yeah, there's different collectibles in every level. Sometimes they made sense. Other times I was baffled as to why I was collecting them. But I'm guessing some of them were either some kind of Easter egg I just didn't get the reference to, like the eggplants on Caprica. Or they were just, you know, one of them was like a Funko Pop character that I was unfamiliar with until I looked it up in Battlestar Galactica World, and it was just them, you know, putting something in there. So sometimes they made sense to the IP, and other times they were just sort of like something different to have you collect each level. There are other universal collectibles like the KFC buckets, Lost Amber, and parts of a Funko called Foxo that you meet in the intro. I believe if you find all the amber, you get to unlock the John Hammond pop.
Nice.
There is a tutorial of sorts. It has some cool cinematic boss fight. It showed me how to do real basic stuff, use the machines. But there was little taught about how to attack or revive, or that certain enemies require special types of damage. I felt like the game, being built out of pop culture, relied on your knowledge of other video games to suss out what you were supposed to be doing. This was frustrating at times. And I felt like I got stuck trying to, like, solve environmental puzzles. Or once I figured out the thing I was supposed to be doing, like firing into a triangle-shaped crystal to open a triangle-shaped lock, I figured easy. But then I couldn't find the square-shaped crystal to open the square lock, and I got stuck again. So this game had, like, a bit of a learning curve to it. And some of the lessons that you learn in some worlds help you know what to do in other worlds, but there's no rhyme or reason to, like, you playing them in any specific order. So some of the how you learn things was just not very well done. Finally figuring out things, though, felt really rewarding. But the time it took to figure some of them out left me feeling, like, frustrated. The achievement list is a little grindy. You'll need to find all the collectibles. And rack up a whopping 5 million vinyl.
Ooh.
Good news. The achievement tracker works.
Oh, thank God. Too many games don't use the achievement tracker.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
So, to kind of sum up here, there are a lot of good things going for the game. A lot of gameplay cutscenes and collecting remind me of the LEGO games in a good way. The franchises they chose to make stories out of feel more adult and appealing to the nostalgia of an older audience. So I didn't feel like I was playing a kid's game, but the game was somewhat friendly to a younger audience in that it didn't have a lot of blood. It just had like vinyl confetti, and like the dinos would have a little speech bubble showing them sleeping as like before their bodies vanished. So that was kind of cute. There was like one scene in the thing where like he gets a spike through his head and there was like maybe like a drip of red, but like it was so brief, it was pretty minor. So like if you had kids like walk in the room, not gonna like freak out. There are some downsides. The game does not hold your hand, and a lot of the puzzle mechanics you'll have to sort out for yourself. There are some balance issues with some of the enemy waves. There were noticeable freezes or stutters during some cutscenes and transitions. Enemies would get stuck in the environment, or I had a key character like Luther from Umbrella Academy got stuck on an indestructible piece of terrain in an escort mission, and I had to start over. Sometimes gameplay and puzzles were slow and boring trying to figure out what the heck I was supposed to be doing because of the lack of tutorial or signposts. So I had higher hopes for this one, but I still had a really good time with it. And it's time
did you
for
her. Run into crashes because
I did not run into any crashes.
Kotaku has a review up that
yeah.
a quote unquote review. Theirs was the PC version, I noticed. They said they had 20 soft locks.
Wow.
In 10 hours of play.
Jesus.
I did not run into anything like that. I did not run into any progression loss.
So that seems to be a PC issue.
Well, I will say this. There, at least on Xbox, there was already a 9.7 gig update on Wednesday. So there's already been patches to the game since launch. And the devs seem eager to patch and update, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I would kind of expect them to be, because this is the kind of game that lends itself to DLC.
Yeah.
So. It really does. Which and, you know, let me... Go ahead.
I was going to say, it worries me, because the only DLC out right now is the pre-ordered DLC, which was The Walking Dead, which is two characters with an alternate costume, and it's $10 for two characters.
Yeah. Well, and that might be a good test in you know, for them to see what they can and can't get away with. My hope would be that they would put out bigger content, because, you, like I said, you have the seven worlds. And then, and just to like clarify what those are, the seven worlds are Jurassic World, Battlestar Galactica, Hot Fuzz, The Thing, Scott Pilgrim, Masters of the Universe, and the Umbrella Academy. So the other stuff are these like little single missions that you have to unlock doing other things. So they could add more full worlds with five levels apiece. They could add more cameo quests, like these other franchises, and add other characters. Like, they do have options for stuff like that if they play their cards right. I think, you know, it would be really fun to see what else that they could add to this.
Yeah, I'm eager to see the future of it, and if they continue to support it. Right now, it's a $59.99 game. What are your thoughts?
So, I'm going to put it at a buy it, but wait for a sale and some patches. Like I said, there were some negative things in there that were frustrating, but not to me world ending. I think that they just are a few patches away from getting a few things more right, and it's still worth a buy, but maybe on sale.
Sounds good. All right, next up is Dross, developed by Emerge Worlds, published by Red Deer Games, released September 19th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $24.99. Dross is a fantasy adventure where you'll swap between a small gooey creature and her human bounty hunter shell. Explore freely through 40 unique diorama-like levels filled with strange characters, intricate puzzles, hidden rooms, and ancient collectibles. Bree, what is Dross?
So, Dross is the word for these little blob-like creatures with eyes, and they seem to have been created by an alchemist in a lab. We wake up in a giant tube as a Dross. And with some jumping and pushing, we break the tube. Here in the lab, we meet other Dross who give us some hints on what to do to escape and survive. And then that we need to find some sort of shell to bond with. So kind of, you know, think of like you've got like a snail and it needs a shell, or a crab, who a hermit crab who needs a shell. You know, you've got to bond to something. Could be a piece of metal, could be something else. So then entering the story is Captain, a heavily armored bounty hunter in search of the alchemist's flute. But we can't go into the tower in the front. Luckily, someone gives us the code to the sewer grate, and we are on our way to find our bounty. We get into some trouble almost immediately with some rat-like dross and some oozing blackness, and we are injured very badly. Luckily, we run into the dross, the little dross we met earlier, and he's looking for a shell, so he offers to help Captain, and by finding little orbs called Prima, we have the powers to heal Captain. Dross can detach from her shell, and or little dross is her name, can detach from her shell and move through grates and press small buttons. She can jump where Captain can slash with a sword, so the two of them make a really good combo. The villain, the alchemist, was playing with forbidden knowledge, got cast out by the high alchemist. He created this tower and these elemental drognauts. And we learn from all this, from another alchemist named Enki. And he's like, he was, I guess, this guy's teacher or something. And we learn that the way to defeat the alchemist is through these drognauts, because they all hold a piece of the evil alchemist's life force. So we had to climb to the top of the tower because it's the only way out. We got to defeat all 40 levels and all four of the evil alchemist creations to get the flute and help our little dross escape. In each of the 40 levels, there are side goals, like collecting a certain amount of blood rock, finding special artifacts, or finishing under a target time. So there's actually like a speed run mode that you can do if you think you're up to that. I don't remember if there was an achievement for that, but I hope not, because I am terrible at speed runs.
Same.
And the art is fantasy mixed with technology and some storybook load screens and cutscenes. The camera moves 360 degrees, but the view is top down, so that whole diorama kind of feel. The font is different between Little Dross and Captain to help differentiate them when they're talking in text box, which I thought was like really cute. apparently I'm losing my voice again.
Yay.
The journal is another language until you unlock things. Because the language of the alchemists, and Captain does not read, but the little dross can. So I thought that was a nice mechanic, kind of like, Tunic, where like things were in another language until you like learned enough things, and then you kind of can see the language more and more. I thought that was cool. Gameplay is more puzzle with a bit of slashing through enemies. There are things only little dross can see, like power lines, invisible platforms, and then the written clues in the foreign language. Little dross can fit in places Captain can't, but isn't as heavy or big enough to press certain buttons or levers. So we spend a lot of time jumping back and forth between just dross or dross with Captain to find all the things and navigate our way through the levels to get to the next elevator, to get to the next level of the tower. And at the end of each section of 10 levels, there's a boss fight with the drognauts. There's poison water everywhere, so you need to jump across or find other ways around, like moving platforms, using switches. Dross's double jump leaves something to be desired, and I found it was tricky to find the right rhythm of jumps, so I didn't just fall flat. The good news is you can die over and over with almost no penalty. There's enough Prima in the game that you can keep healing, so you do take like a little bit of health damage if you flat out die. As you progress through the game and help do missions for Enki, the alchemist mentor guy, you get other abilities that expand your mind, I guess. You can expand the viewing of the level, which I thought was a really cool effect. You can zoom out and see the bigger picture, get a better idea of where to go or where things are. Or you can get a mega dash with Captain that allows you to break through some obstacles, like rolling balls of doom. So there's very inventive little mechanics that you get as you progress through the game. But I had an okay time with this one. I didn't have an amazing time with it. And I need to take a sip of my drink.
Well, while you're sipping, I will remind everyone that it is a $24.99 game. Just released today on Xbox and Series X and S. What are your thoughts on the game for $25?
So I'm going to put this in a try it. I found the jumping to be irritating at times, and solving puzzles sometimes felt like a bit of luck instead of logic or observation. I love the concept of the two characters working together with different abilities. I thought the world was really interesting, but I didn't find the gameplay as engaging as I wanted it to be. I think the price is good for the amount of content, but I just didn't have as much fun as I thought I should.
That's fair. All right, next up, Paper Ghost Stories, Third Eye Open, developed by Cellar Vault Games, published by Chorus Worldwide Games, released September 5th on Series X and S, Switch, and PS5 for $16.99. Third Eye Open is a coming-of-age story about a young girl with the ability to see spirits. Will this burgeoning power be a blessing or a curse? Will you be able to save your family and unravel the mystery at the heart of the adventure? Bree, tell us about Paper Ghost Stories, Third Eye Opening.
So one of the first things to note about the sequel is that the original game Paper Ghost Stories 7pm was delisted prior to the release of the game to avoid confusion. So while you'll be missing out on achievements, you won't be missing out on any of the story if you pick this game up because it includes both games in one. Third Eye Open has a chapter select for the 11 chapters it contains, making this a much bigger game than the original. Third Eye Open features 6-year-old Ting, who is a medium of sorts, and that does not lead to a semi-charmed life. Sorry, little third eye blind joke. I couldn't resist. It's 2005, and we've just moved into a new house, and we almost immediately meet a ghost girl named Shu. Everyone naturally talks behind Ting's back about the imaginary friend because no one else can see this ghost. We go on a community camping trip, we get to know the neighbors better, and the other jerk kids decide to peer pressure you and the one nice kid into going in the forest at night to look for a missing hiker. But this is a spooky game, if you remember. So you've been warned with some spooky camp stories about the ghosts in the woods, where I ran into an infuriating stealth section. But we'll get back to the story. The art style is, as you might guess, a cut paper aesthetic. It says if you were animating a bunch of paper dolls and set pieces, and it's pretty. The gameplay is similar to a visual novel with some other elements thrown in. Paper Ghost Stories is a slice of life mixed with narrative horror. There are some quick time events with conversation choices. There's a little mini game where you make kebabs for the campers. There are other elements like stealth and exploration that help break up some of the massive reading you'll do while you're navigating the story. Some other quick time events, like I had to sneak around at like preschool. Everyone's taking a nap and you like break out and you have to like press the button at the right time. So you're like tiptoeing in between all the little beds on the floor. And if you mess those quick time events up, no big deal. You just start over. But some of them were a little frustrating because they kind of just like throw them at you like with no warning. The language is broken English as a point of authenticity to its Malaysian and Chinese roots in both myth and culture. And the text boxes offer some informational footnotes to explain certain words or concepts, like "ayo" being a common sound of frustration. "Ayo, ayo." I would say that a lot. Because, you know, everyone's frustrated with a 6-year-old. If you get lost, there's a journal to help remind you of your objectives, which was very helpful. There is a trope here that's a bit frustrating, and that's one about kids not being believed by adults. And that's just like a personal grumble. It's something that even Sesame Street addressed after years of Big Bird not being believed about Snuffleupagus, because it reinforced the idea that if you told adults the truth, it didn't matter anyway, that kids would stop like coming to adults with information. So this has that trope in it. And if that's something you're sensitive to, like, just be aware that that's the narrative. Dad's kind of a jerk, but mom seems nice, except something's wrong with her and she's losing time, not remembering things. Could be something supernatural, could be something else. There are some fairly normal parenting arguments going on. Some of the storytelling was a little cliche there, but that also made it accessible in a lot of ways to a universal audience, given its cultural setting. The horror vibe felt minimal in this in comparison to the first game. It felt a little more focused on the slice of life stuff early on in the game, which was not always as engaging as I wanted. I felt like this was geared towards a younger audience, and the pacing felt a little slow. But back to that campground incident with the malevolence, there's a malevolent spirit that tells Ting it will let us go because something else already has their eye on us. And later at preschool, we have a creepy ghost encounter with a kid who drowned in 1982. Remember, I said it was like 2005 in the story, so this kid died a while ago, is still like ghosting around. And by solving the mystery and acknowledging this ghost, he's finally able to move on. So we get to do some stuff like that. Not long after we meet up with our friends, we get dared to go into an abandoned our friends. I say our friends in quotations. It's the mean kids again. we get Derek to go into an abandoned house that the kids think are haunted. And that's where the story finally starts to pick up in terms of the horror, which was very cool. So yeah, it's a little slow to get to the good parts. It's a well-written narrative, though. I think the developers are trying to tell a bigger story here, and there's lots of lore and culture that are well featured in Third Eye Open. I don't think I enjoyed the pacing as much as I enjoyed in the first game, but I think overall it's a decent game if you like a visual novel type adventure.
Ooh, well, it's $17. What are your thoughts?
Again, I'm going to put this at a try it. If you like the first game, you'd probably also like this. If you've never played either, this includes both games, which is a nice package for a nice price. Just, again, the pacing's a little slow in the beginning of the game. And there were some long load screens or stutters before choices that were noticeable at times. Overall, I had a good time with it, but it just wasn't, it didn't have that pop that I felt. And maybe that was just because it was a little bigger. They drew it out a little too much. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Bree, that is it for you. We will let you get going so you could do your pirate talking.
Yar.
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 Walk the plank, Yar. Bree.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. Walking the plank. Why didn't I think of that? All right.
Work on your pirate.
Well, you all have a good night, and I will walk the plank. Yar.
Sounds Yar. Good. Any final words?
That was it.
That was your final words.
Yar.
Yar. Yar.
All right, next game to talk about is The Plucky Squire, developed
Plucky
by All
Squire.
Developed by All Possible Futures, published by Devolver. Okay, I got to stop. Released September 17th on Xbox Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Also available as part of PS Plus Extra, storybook characters discover a three-dimensional world outside the pages of their book and must jump between 2D and 3D realms to save their friends in this charming action adventure. Grant, you played this one. Tell us about The Plucky Squire.
Yes, it does sound like a pirate game, doesn't it?
Arr.
But it's not. It's not. Plucky Squire is an adventure puzzle and platformer game where everything takes place in a single room in this house, and mostly within a storybook in that room. You play a character named Jot and a few of his childhood friends. The bad guy of the book, Hum Grump, he's sort of tired of always losing, and he has developed a way to create magic that can throw you from the book, get rid of you, get gone, so he can sort of take over the book's world and the book's story. But by doing this for the first time, it sort of grants you powers to enter and exit the book. So we're literally talking, you are on the page of a book in 2D, and then you exit the book in a 3D world pretty regularly. It's sort of the gimmick, you're sort of transporting back and forth, not whenever you want, you have to go through portals. And you're either in the book or you're in the world. When you're on paper, when you're in the book, you have the ability to slash and roll. You eventually get other combat abilities, and it sort of goes between maybe like what might be considered a top-down view of action or the occasional side-scrolling segments. You have the entire two pages of the book as your screen, right? And then when you leave the page in a certain direction, the page is turned and you move on to the next screen. It's very cool. The gameplay sort of goes back and forth between combat and puzzles. Storybooks are all about words, and you may encounter situations where what's going on the page is described in words on the page. And those words, parts of those words can be picked up and moved, so you can sort of change the scenario. For example, you might see that there's a gate and the gate is closed, and it says that on the page. Well, if you find the word open somewhere, you can pick that word up, put it in, replace the word closed, and it opens the gate. So it's that kind of puzzle solving, pretty basic stuff, but it's pretty charming. There are moments where you leave the book entirely and you're exploring the room. It's like looks sort of like a 3D Mario game with characters that look like that, with very photorealistic environment design. Really, really, it looks really good. Looks fantastic. Sometimes you have to leave the book temporarily for puzzle reasons, so you might have to go get out of the book and turn the pages yourself. to sort of manipulate the world in some other way. Other segments play out like full levels outside the book, like full platforming levels, a la Sunshine or something like that, with platforming segments and bosses and stuff outside the book. There are no loading screens ever. It's pretty amazing. You're sort of always in this world, either on paper or out in the world. And so it gives the opportunity for the outside world to sort of change, you know, to the next segment while you're in the book. So it all feels very seamless. But you're always either on the pages or you're in the room. You know, I wouldn't say there's an upgrade tree really, but there are upgrades, with a single currency you get from slashing bushes and defeating enemies. But it's mostly upgrades to combat. And some of the page turns are pretty cool. The way it handles cutscenes is you'll turn the page and then there'll be just this huge drawing cutscenes, this really cool narrator, and he'll sort of like give you a little bit of break in the story and tell you what's going on, and the page turns and you're back in the action. I thought the writing is fantastic. It's very funny. There's a lot of it in this game. It's a very talky game. It doesn't really get in the way, and you can skip through stuff pretty quickly, but lots of writing, lots of stop and go. Characters are sort of always talking. But it's always about forward momentum. This is not an open world game by any stretch. You can't go back. It pushes you forward. I think some people may find that the game is a little hand-holdy, a little directional. There's a little character that's there you can talk to if you have problems with puzzles and stuff like that. But it is over-explained. It doesn't give a lot in terms of discovery. I think that's okay in a game like this, but there might have been some missed opportunities to use some of the tools you've learned to really get into some brain-bending puzzles. But it's very friendly. Bosses in the game play out like mini games, like completely separate from the regular game. One is kind of like playing Punch-Out. One is sort of rhythm game-based. There's one that's kind of like a shmup segment. They're pretty good. I think they're a little hit and miss. Some are more fun than others. Some overstayed their welcome a little bit. I think the one like the shmup segment was actually super fun, but it didn't show up enough. But it's pretty clever. I think the gimmick overall is pretty fully realized. I think they accomplished something here. A lot of times you'll see a game that has like the first time you see the gimmick, you go, whoa, right? Like, I've never seen that in a game before. And then after you get into the game, that sort of the wow power doesn't stay, right? You're just sort of going through the motions, but they keep changing things here. I think it's actually pretty interesting. It's about 8 hours, a little over is what I spent on it. So it's not too long, very creative. There's a big twist near the end of the game, which is a lot of fun. And I will say, ooh, the final boss of this game is completely unhinged. I'm just trying to think to myself, like, what is this final boss going to be? Like, what is it? Am I just going to be using all my powers at once? I won't say what it is, but it is pretty rad and crazy. So that's fun. Great music. The head wizard is this DJ character and is always spinning records and stuff in his house. It's pretty cool. It's very funny. I did run into a few bugs in the game. Maybe two or three, lost a minute or so of progress, normally getting hung up on geometry, stuff they'll probably figure out, but nothing that broke the game. But overall, I really liked it. Again, it's not that long. It's very linear, but it is definitely one of those games that you've just never played before. It's a very friendly experience. I think it's written really well. I think it executes on what it's trying to do pretty well. So, and also a very surprisingly colorful title from Devolver. I'm used to, I was waiting for this game to turn into a freaking horror game. You know what I mean? Because that's kind of the Devolver way. Three quarters through, it's this meta thing and people are out in the woods hunting for runes and there's blood. It's not, it's just a chill, colorful storybook game. And I mean, you know, Fall, like, did it kind of thing with Fall Guys too, but Fall Guys just feels a little more Devolver, but definitely a different step for them. And I find that interesting. So yeah,
Fall Guys is epic.
It is, but it's also just like a giant pillow fight. Like, I could see Devolver making a pillow fight. This almost feels like I don't know. I'm glad they picked it up. I'm glad they're putting out something that is like, they're all about doing unique things. Hello. They did it.
Yar.
So,
Bree said a quote from one of her crew, "Yar, these dickheads be trying my patience." Huh. So had to bring that up. Plucky Squire clocks in at $30. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's great. It's not a very long adventure. If game time's a concern for you at all for a $30 game, if you're looking for a, you know, 20 to 30 hour game, you're not going to get it. But I feel like what's here is solid. You might want to consider just staying away from the little hint guy. The little mini wizard is amazing, but unless you just want to be have your hand held through the entire game, maybe stay away from him and use the brain juice. But I think it's fantastic. I think it's really good, and I'm glad I played through the whole thing, and I would definitely recommend it.
I appreciated the achievements in this game because there were some fun, different achievements that built on the wordplay in the game. Like one of the earlier puzzles, there's a frog there that's a tiny frog. And if you find a way to make him bigger, achievement.
Oh, very cool. I think I got one of those, but I didn't get that one.
Yeah, there's a couple that are like that. And I like how it encourages you to jump back pages to get old words to bring forward.
Yeah, you could pretty much go, I don't think you can, it's split into chapters, right? 10 chapters in the game. I think you can go back to the beginning of each chapter in the book. I don't think you can go to previous chapters, but you can go all the way. You can even go to like what you might call the cutscene pages, right? Like the pages that aren't gameplay focused for the sake of finding secrets and accomplishing puzzles and stuff. So, yeah, I was doing a lot of flipping, a lot of page flipping in this game.
Yeah, this was a fun one. I'm glad we got to cover this one. I'm glad you covered it for us.
Yes, I was very excited about this one. So, yeah, I'm glad I got to chat about it.
Very cool. All right. Well, are you going to stick around or are you heading out? I don't know how much.
Yeah, I'm going to hang. I want to hear listen to the reviews.
Cool. All right. We'll move on. Next game, Mind Seize, developed by Kamina Dimension, published by Sometimes You, released September 20th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Microsoft Store, PS4, PS5. For $16.99 on each platform, transfer your mind into a mag and set out to an epic action adventure with sci-fi setting. Aiming to save your daughter, an even bigger threat emerges. Fast-paced combat and extensive exploration awaits, inspired by a wide range of Metroidvania classics. Jacob, what is Mind Seize?
So Mind Seize is this futuristic cyberpunk kind of game where this group has stolen the mind of your daughter, and she's now, her body is now like being kept on life support because you know she's alive but nothing's going on in there until you can get her soul back. And you're wounded, and but this like cybernetics group, like it's like they're not even like a cybernetics group, it's like think of like if Guardians of the Galaxy showed up and was like, hey, let's put your brain in a robot body. Like it's like that. And so they just drop you on these planets, and you just have to go around and shoot the bad aliens, collect supplies so you can upgrade your weapons. There are a few NPCs that you're able to meet. And most of them, like, they just help you along your way in various ways, usually also by upgrading your stuff. And then you, because these ne'er-do-wells that you've, shacked up with are a bunch of bounty hunters, you also have to go after specific, aliens, robots, whatever the heck you want to call them, and yeah, you have to capture them. And all of this is being done in a Castlevania, Metroidvania layout with the world. And there is a lot to explore. And one of the things I thought was really cool is that there is some stuff that's blocked off until you get higher weapons. But for the most part, you can just wander around as much as you want. Like, I mean, you're going to get fucked by somebody. Pretty much. I mean, you're going to get fucked by some of these bosses if you're not leveled up before you wander into their territory. But, like, you know, as long as you're quick enough on the buttons, like, you can get around a decent amount. And it's awesome, like, exploring the place. Like, there's secret tunnels. They're not, like, tree houses, but, like, you know, platforms up in the trees that you can explore. And as you shoot down these various animals or robots, whatever, that's coming after you, there's like a little guide that gets updated as well. And it's just, there was a lot of time and effort that got put into this game. Like, it looks beautiful. And it's a lot of fun too.
Cool 16-bit looking pixel art to it. It's really good looking game. I like the visual style to it.
Yeah, I was having a little bit of an issue, like aiming the gun, because like sometimes you have to aim it up or diagonally. And I was having some issue with that at times, but
is it twin stick aiming or is it just single analog aim?
It's single analog. I don't know if you could change it, and thank God there's an easy mode that you can fire up from the options menu, because I needed that. But yeah, it's just like, I mean, I got my ass kicked repeatedly, and the game just beams you down in a new robot body. But it's a lot of fun. Like, I was expecting a lesser game, and I was really surprised with what we got.
Cool. Well, this one is a $16.99 game. It's a little more expensive for a sometimes you title, but it looks like the production values and everything else is significantly higher than some of the lower indie stuff that they've done. Is the $17 worth it?
I would think so. I mean, I enjoyed it, and if you're a fan of Metroidvanias or cyberpunk stuff, like, this is going to be up in your wheelhouse. Like, it's a worthy addition to that genre.
Nice. And remember the drill with sometimes you titles. If you buy it on Xbox One, then you'll get a discount on the Series X and S and Microsoft Store versions. Buy it on PS4, you'll get a discount on PS5 version. Is this something people should pick up multiple stacks or just one and done?
There's a lot of content to this game. So unless you are like, you are super locked in that you have to get all 2000 points, I would just stick with one version.
Sounds good. All right. Next up is Bzzz, developed by KO.DLL, published by Cinemax Games, released September 19th on Switch for $14.99. Become a tiny ZX8000 robot, travel through beautiful pixel art levels, and save the world one platform challenge at a time. Jacob, what is Bzzz?
Bzzz is a, it's really, I mean, it's an action platformer, but there's a definite, like, you know, they also want that speed running population that to play this as well. And so what it is that you are this robot, very similar to Mega Man, except you can't really shoot. And you just have to get from point A to point B, because the scientists who created you, their place is under attack. And so they had set up all these tests that you were supposed to complete once you gain sentience and all that kind of stuff. And just so they could figure out what your abilities are. Well, guess what? We're being invaded now. You have to figure out all your abilities and turn off all of these traps to get from point A to point B. And honestly, it's pretty wild. Like, it holds your hand, thankfully. And it's really not that important to go as quick as you can. Like, the game does allow you to like think things through, which I really did like. And on top of it, it didn't get, like, so often we get indie games with this kind of setup, and it's just like cookie cutter level after another. They really took their time to come up with the puzzles and multiple ways that, like, sometimes you could solve levels. And I just thought it was pretty cool. Like, my oldest son was getting into it, and he remarked that it looked like Mega Man kind of stuff, because I raised him well. but, like, it's accessible for kids, too. Like, he liked the challenge. I was enjoying the challenge. And some of the boss battles.
You said this is what, level based?
Yeah, like there's multiple, like, it's just you start level from
move on, yeah. Right.
Yeah, you start from one transporter, you have to make it to the next one. and then you start up on a new level. But there are like these boss battles in there, and you have to like it's a lot of dodging. Or sometimes like you get to step on like platforms and like they'll blast lasers and stuff like that. And I'm not gonna lie, it's pretty creative, like how you have to defeat some of these guys. I really enjoyed it. I really hope that this comes to Xbox.
I'm looking at some of the screenshots for the game. I noticed there's a timer, so obviously there's the speedrun element. What are the bolts that you got to pick up? Are those required for every level, or are they just...
They're just there, and you just, like, it's just, like, kind of like a, oh, you picked up all 30 coins kind of thing, except this one, it's bolts.
I didn't know if there was a deeper purpose to those, or just collect and go.
Now that you mention it, I'm not quite sure, because I did a lot of just collecting go, and I was just going level after level after level after level after level. Like, it's an addicting game, and I'm not gonna lie, if there is some sort of upgrade version like thing to it, you don't like, it's not important like in terms of accessibility on this game. Like, you know, it's not like, oh, well, you have to go back to the shop so you can buy this and then you have this. No, you can just, you're like, the only thing that you need are your skills, which hopefully you have them.
Hey, you don't.
Hey, I made it pretty far in the game. So I made it farther than my kid.
That's fair. Well, bzzzt, so is $14.99.
I'm better at a video game than a 10-year-old. So I'm there.
My cat's trying to pee on things.
Get out of here.
Get on it.
All right. Bzzzt is $14.99. What are your thoughts on bzzzt?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'd recommend it. It's, I mean, at $15. Yeah, it's well worth what you're getting.
You're not saying enough.
If you're expecting like Mega Man, like shoot 'em up action, bzzzt is not going to have it.
There you go.
But if you're looking for like, you know, some fun platforming action while you also have to solve puzzles, then bzzzt is definitely something that you should spend $15 on.
Arbzzt.
Bzzzt. Yar.
Bzzzt. That just sounded like a drunk Southern guy.
Bzzzt. That sounds profane in some way. I don't know what it is. Anyway, moving on. Next game, Mika and the Witch's Mountain, developed by Chibig and Nuke Fist, published by Chibig, released August 21st on Steam Early Access for $19.99. Mika and the Witch's Mountain is a fantasy adventure about an aspiring witch who delivers packages to the townspeople of a small island. Explore every cranny and soar through the sky with your magic broom. Aki, what is Mika and the Witch's Mountain?
Okay, in this, you play as a young witch, Mika. She is an apprentice who is just now starting her first day of school.
Is she a dark Mika, and is she on fire?
Sadly, no. You can get a dark outfit for her, so she does become dark Mika, so that's nice. She never gets set on fire, which probably a good thing, probably. Yeah. So she's going to school for the first day. She meets with this super witch that everyone respects, the principal and teacher of this school, it appears. And in her infinite wisdom, she decides to shove you off the top of this mountain because she's cool and stuff, I guess. So you get flung down, your broom breaks, because of course it does. And you find yourself near a village. Well, you need your broom fixed. And it kind of costs that thing called money. Something that you, a child, don't really have any notion of. So you have to go and find work, because there are no child labor laws here. and you very quickly find yourself working at a delivery service. And yes, this is Kiki's Delivery Service. You all are correct if you watch Ghibli films. And you start using your barely fixed up broom to start flying to make some money so you can get a better and better broom so you can eventually, hopefully, get back up to your teacher because you need to become an amazing witch. And that hag who threw you off is apparently who you've decided is a good teacher. So yeah, basically, you live through 4 days of this girl's life, all consecutive days, and each day you have to complete packages. You have to send them to different people. And for that, you pick it up. Because of how this island is, some of the packages you're told, oh, don't hit it against anything. So if you drop from high heights or you toss it off of something like a stupid person, it will take damage. Some of them are timed ones, so you have to get there within a certain time period. Others, it's like, you can't get this package wet. But you, as long as you're fulfilling all of those, you get a green sticker for that. And that says you did a great job and you make money with that one. If you screw it up a little bit, you get a face, which is yellow, and you don't get paid for that one. And the other one is you really, really, really fucked that up in every possible way, and you get a frowny face that is red, and you get fired. So yeah, there's not a lot of packages. The very first day, I believe it had 8 packages. And then each subsequent day, it gets some more packages that you have to do. And basically, it's just a day in the life. After you're done delivering all the packages, that day is over, and you start the next day. While you're delivering packages in between them, or while you're actively delivering, there are collectibles that you can find around the area. There is 100 of them, and they're all these little figures, the just generic bodied shapes, kind of like snowmen, but made out of rocks. And you collect those, and you can use those to buy a couple different outfits, as well as some charms that I don't know the purpose of the charms, because when I wore any of them, I couldn't find them anywhere on the character model, so I don't know. There's 100 of them, which is exactly how much you need to buy all the different outfits and charms. Other than that, you know, sometimes after you deliver a package, they'll be like, hey, can you deliver this to this other person for me? Which also adds into the amount. You eventually do find some missing lost packages that you can also deliver. They do not net you any money. It's just being a decent person for the sake of being a decent person. And yeah, that is a majority of the game right there. There's not a lot to it. It is a decently length game, but you're mostly just focusing on collecting stuff and delivering packages. There's not a lot else. 'Cause again, there's only 4 days in this game. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, it is in early access. They believe that it'll be in early access for about 6 months. They plan to add more quests, more broom tricks, a fishing mini game, more languages and dungeons. What are your thoughts on the game now at $20? Is it worth people jumping into now, wishlisting it? Should people follow it? What are your thoughts?
I think it's totally worth the money now. It was a cute, fun little game. I didn't know what they were adding, so I'm like super excited to see what all's added when it actually gets full release, because I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Just to be aware, if you care about Steam achievements, all of them seem to be broken right now, because I've not gotten a single one. I've 100%ed the game, so you know.
Oh, wow.
They're not. It working
shows
right
that
now.
They're getting unlocked. Like, people have percentages on them.
I know, right?
If something's just fucky with them, I don't know.
I'm guessing that one of their updates broke it. Would be my guess, because there's even a guide of where all the collectibles and stuff are, which I used because I found like 60-ish of them and I couldn't find the others. So, yeah, all the achievements, they know exactly how to pop them. They'll give you the locations of all of them. I think right now they're just broken due to an update.
It'll get 15 fixed. Hours ago, Chibig said, "Hi, everyone. We fixed it this morning and currently waiting for Steam to approve it. The progression achievements will appear retroactively. You should repeat the actions that trigger the other ones."
Okay. So I'm going to be restarting the game. All right. That's fine. So, that's there fine you go. With me.
They fixed it. So
awesome. 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 Sadly, most of the things that you have to do in the game that aren't going to be retroactive, I can't redo some of those because I'm sure the collectibles are going to be one of them, and I have all of them.
Well, that might be progression related, so that might just pop.
Hopefully. We'll see. If not, I'll replay the whole game when it gets a full release. It's fine. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm willing to play through the whole thing all over again. It's fun.
Nice. All right, moving on. Next game is Andromeda Survivors, developed by Dev Dum and Aleo Games, published by Aphil Games, released September 19th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, as well as on the Windows Store for $4.99. That's $4.99 on Xbox, $4.99 on Windows. Prepare yourself for an epic journey in Andromeda Survivors, a casual game with roguelite elements that will challenge your skills and strategy. In a universe threatened by thousands of enemies, you are the last defender of Andromeda. Command your ship and destroy endless waves of adversaries while collecting skills and powerful upgrades to create the most incredible and invincible builds. Jacob, what is Andromeda Survivors? I'm going to guess it's a Survivors game.
Oh my god, no way! How... Jeez, you're like psychic, dude.
I try.
So
what is it? Tell us about it.
So Andromeda Survivors takes the Vampire Survivors formula and puts it in space. And I'm not gonna lie, I really thought that this was gonna be like a crap game that didn't at like, you know, oh, they're just making a quick buck, blah 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 blah. And I should have learned this from Aphil's other Survivor game, the previous one that I had to do. And as it turns out, like, you know, there's actually quite a bit of depth in this game. And so you start off with this spaceship that has no powers whatsoever, and you're just running around this little space area. And you're just shooting your laser cannons at enemy ships, collecting experience and stuff. Well, it also tosses in, all this is happening around an asteroid belt. And so asteroids are moving in and out of the game arena constantly. And so not only do you have to watch where you're going and like dodging the enemy ships, but you also need to be dodging the asteroids, some of which have power-ups for you. I mean, not necessarily power-ups, but sometimes they drop like extra XP or they drop health for you, much like the lampposts or similar things in Vampire Survivors. But what's really cool with this is that it takes a really arcadey approach, and you can move to the opposite side of the screen. And so like if you're getting your ass hammered on the left, you just exit left. And then boom, you're on the right side of the screen, which you can then do a sneak attack against the alien fighters that you're going up against. And likewise, you can go up and down on the screen. And so you could just pop on one side of the screen, do a bunch of shots, hop out, you know, unload on the other side of the screen, hop out. Like you could just keep doing this. But of course, the asteroids are also coming in through that. So you need to be really careful with where you're launching yourself and where you're going to end up. And it's just, it's unexpectedly challenging and really thrilling. And I'm really surprised with this. I'm pleasantly surprised with this one. I'm not going to lie.
So this is a Survivors game that actually has a distinct and unique twist to it.
Yes. It actually, it very much feels like if somebody had made a Survivors game in the 1970s, like it's pretty rad and it's worth picking up, especially for $5.
Well, I was just about to say it's $5. What are your thoughts? Give us
absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome.
Is it worth picking up on Xbox and on Windows or just one or the other?
I mean, you're asking the wrong guy on that, because I don't ever do any PC gaming. So,
For achievement stacks, I don't know if you care.
If you're going to do achievement stacks, then yeah, I would do it. I mean, the devs have already updated it, so it's already up to 2,000 points. Yeah. Because there was a title, update. And while I still have yet to survive beyond the 10-minute mark, most of them are pretty doable. So, yeah. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. This one's a keeper.
Nice. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and is it worth the After Dark?
No.
All right,
I'm not gonna lie, I totally forgot that I had this game to review, and so I was about to mute my mic so Aki could talk.
No,
I'm doing good.
It's you.
I'm doing good.
It's you. All right, yep. One final game to talk about tonight is Moe Waifu H, developed by Yume Game Studio and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released September 13th on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Moe Waifu H Genius is a simple and addictive action puzzler where your goal is to memorize sequences as icons are activated on screen, then replay the sequence in matching order. Execute sequences correctly and you'll earn the hearts of your beautiful companions. Can you unlock all of their cute outfits and win them over? I'll just say right away, this is a T-rated game, so it's not.
Yeah, that's why I was saying, like, it doesn't need to have the After Dark.
I just got to check, because when it says waifu, you know, gotta.
Well, yeah, no. I get you, and I'm not gonna lie, like, you know, because this is on Switch, and I don't think Aki, you don't have a Switch, do you?
Nope.
No. Yeah. And so I was like, ha, I get one of these. And I'm like, oh, okay.
T rated. Oh,
yeah. I know. I didn't know that before I accepted this. And so what it is that you're presented with these different women, one at a time, and you have to complete three rounds of sequence memorization. And at first it's simple because it's just like up, down, left, right. And you only have to memorize at most four of the sequence. And most of it is like up, right, down, left. Yay. Good job. And all of a sudden the game will just throw this like, all right, here's like eight different things and none of it makes sense, like crown, sword, potion, like hourglass, it's just nothing that is easy to stick in your mind. And each of the three, like, you unlock pictures that you can look at. And the first one is always the girl in her outfit. And then it's the girl in a smaller outfit. Like, I really couldn't determine what the big difference was between pictures two and three. So I don't know if like one is like supposed to be like swimsuit wear and then the other one is like bra and panties. But it's like they squeal this excited phrase in Japanese after you like successfully finish a round, but the game doesn't translate it, so I have no idea what they're saying to me. And like, again, once I realized that I was not going to be getting to see any boobs in this game, the want to continue was not nearly as high. And so I kept going through the different levels, and the game does get progressively harder, and the game does warn you that the final boss plays slightly differently because you have to reverse things with her. And yeah, it's there. Like, you're doing a bunch of like pattern memorization so you can look at like PG-13. Yeah, like, you know, the tamer stuff from the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. So,
oh, it's a $4.99 game. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, I know that there's folks who are into this kind of stuff. Like, good for them. I'm not going to knock it. But there are much better games that you could spend $4.99 on if you're not a fan of this genre. Yeah, you could. Or, I'm just... This one did not impress me. And, like, it just felt like it was, like, a really quick port. I was surprised that they didn't give you an option. Like, you know, they didn't tell you what the girls are saying. Like, yeah, I don't know. It just, there was a lot that could have been done better.
Ah, well. Anyway, that's it. We're done. We made it.
I'm not going to lie. Like, as soon as I was done, or as soon as I had played enough of that game for review. Oh,
you're still going with the review. Okay.
No, I mean, not really, but I mean, I'm talking about.
Now he's just spitballing.
I'm talking about the game.
We're just riffing, man. We're just riffing.
Riffing.
But it was like,
Yar.
You know, my family shares the Switch. Okay. So like my kids are on it all the time. My oldest beat Breath of the Wild. He was really proud of that. And I was really proud of that too. So the kids are on it way more than me. And like, after I was done with it and I like deleted it off my hard drive, I was like, this wasn't even like worth like, you know, oh crap, my kids might see this on the Nintendo Switch. Like, yeah, like it's just like, I don't know. It's like discovering like a porn mag and you find out that it's actually just like, you know, the fall fashion catalog for JCPenney. Like, okay, I guess you could like get all hot and bothered over this game, but man, like that, yeah, just a letdown.
You're so passionate about this one.
Well, it's the thing
and
is
that because there weren't any titties. Wow.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, because Aki usually takes these kind of games. And so, like, you know, it's one of those times where I'm like, oh, haha, I'm the one who gets to do this. And it sucks.
You can have all the titty games that are on Steam or PlayStation. Or yeah, not Steam, on Switch and PlayStation.
Yeah, that doesn't
have a PlayStation.
Me.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah, and
I can give you all the games that have dicks on them, if that makes you feel better.
So, I mean, yeah, that's the end of this episode.
How many of those kind of games are there for like Switch? I mean, because I don't know. There's like boob games, but there's no dick game, right? No,
there's
like, no unless you game. Consider like the Cho and Nikki stuff, which
gotta be one, is. Right?
Which the remaster of that comes out next year, and I'm really hoping that it gets a stateside release.
We know.
What?
That you want it.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
I don't even know what game that is.
You look at sweaty, wrestling guys like two or three times a week. So,
two or three more than that, my man.
I don't know. I don't know your TV viewing habits.
I watch all the wrestling. All the man wrestles. I'm going to have to show you a match one day. It features what they called the ass compactor.
Okay.
Which is just like two naked asses clamping up and down, and they shoved someone's head in there.
Was it real asses or like like a fake?
Oh, two dudes mashing their asses together.
What wrestling like company was this?
GCW, Game Changer Wrestling, and they where did a they promotion. They're United States, but they did a show in Japan with I think DDT.
Say no more. Say no more. But
they had the two legitimate gayest wrestlers possible wrestle each other in what might be the gayest match I've ever seen, and I show it to everyone because it's amazing. Like it is peak wrestling. It is.
You
so
need to
good.
Show it to me too. And I don't even like wrestling. I just really like the concept.
You just like watching two dudes roll around on the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, at least they know their place.
All right, well, that's it for this episode. I'm gonna cut this one off here. Grant, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out with us for the whole episode. Music, we're gonna play something from you. What should we play?
Oh, I don't know what was the last thing I did. I don't remember that I put out.
Name the favorite thing you did then.
Oh, you know, I'm learning a song I haven't ever done live before for a live show in October. You could play my Grandia 2 fight song.
Ooh, that was a fun one. Grande 2?
What's that?
Aria Grande 2?
Aria Grande 2, yes. The second one. It's way better than the first one.
I thought it was the Nacho Bell Grande 2. Okay.
Oh, that would be delicious too. I'm into all of those things.
Are you going to rename it Nacho Bell Grande 2 now?
I may. That'd be hilarious. Maybe I'll just put that on the screen behind me. Nacho Bell Grandia.
Where are you performing?
I'm playing in at this little tiny convention. It's a few years in, it's first year with music, called R2V2, and it's near Chicago. A buddy of mine's putting it on. He wanted to do some music stuff, and so I've been playing my first solo stemmed show and since before the pandemic, actually. Damn. And then a couple other acts playing too, so it should be fun. So I'm knocking the dust off.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed in preparation for MAGFest. I hope I see you there.
Yeah, I should see you there. I'll be at MAG. Very cool. Yeah.
All right, so we're going to play Ariande Nacho Bell Grande 2.
Yes. Nacho Bell Grariande 2.
Grande Aria 2.
Tacos and pop and JRPGs. Let's do it.
So let's do it. Thanks again to you for being here. Thanks to Bree for coming on, doing her thing. Thanks, I guess, to Jacob and blah, blah, blah. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
No.
Yo quiero. Nacho Bell.
Yo quiero. Toco bien.
Cien baños triste.
Okay, what's that mean?
I knew I was going to ask.
100 sad toilets.
That's what the Bell Grande 2 will do to you right there.